Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
If you believe nothing's getting done in Washington, one of Florida's freshman congresspeople begs to differ.
This Congress actually has managed to pass more bills than any Congress since Truman was president.
Wow.
And Trump has signed more into law than any president since Truman. That you just don't see that very often on the news.
Also this week, after a rough several days, the Florida Highway Patrol's trying to look ahead to a more positive future.
Troopers work tirelessly, selfishly to keep our state safe, and the value they bring to our state is immeasurable. You have my commitment here today that no quotas will be tolerated within the Florida Highway Patrol.
We'll also learn why some folks are blaming a new gas pipeline for a big stink in their neighborhood, and we'll look ahead to Monday's big show in the sky, a rare solar eclipse. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Last year, North Florida voters sent two polar opposites, Republican Neil Dunn and Democrat Al Lawson, to represent them in Congress. The wide philosophical and partisan gulf separating the two men and much of the nation was on full display during recent appearances in Tallahassee. We get that story from Jim Ash.
Dunn is a white, Army-trained urologist from Panama City with a booming surgical practice that boasts 45 physicians. He prefers the honorific doctor to congressman, but he also likes to stress that he's a businessman. Like Donald Trump, Dunn has no great love for the mainstream media.
You know, it's kind of a shame that the press isn't telling you more about what's actually going on in Washington. So I thought maybe that's my job to come here and give you a little look behind the TV news, behind the newspapers, and give you a perspective of what I see there. And, you know, it's not all roses.
Dunn gave his full-throated defense of the Trump agenda at a recent party luncheon. It's important to note that Dunn spoke before a white nationalist rally in Virginia and before Trump's controversial remarks sparked a political firestorm. Dunn likes to repeat a favorite Trump talking point that most outside the Beltway find hard to believe.
This Congress actually has managed to pass more bills than any Congress since Truman was president. And Trump has signed more into law than any president since Truman. That you just don't see that very often on the news.
The watchdog PolitiFact confirms that Trump's 28 bills in 100 days hasn't been beaten in 70 years. But PolitiFact also calls Trump's bills insignificant, including two that name buildings and another designating a memorial. Dunn couldn't disagree more.
15 Congressional Review Acts, those are rolling back major regulations. 14 are signed into law already. The RAINS Act, which forces all future rules and regulations that have more than $100 million impact on the economy to come back to Congress for approval. So that's going to stop all these silly regulations that we've been getting out of the EPA.
Dunn's list includes the House health care reform package, although he fails to note that Trump eventually called it mean. Dunn says not all Republican triumphs required legislation. He praises Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accord and Trump's rollback of Obama-era environmental regulations.
Illegal immigration is way down. Sanctuary cities, you've seen the news. I know those are going away. We're actually going to put that into law as well, so it's not just a rule.
Dunn is confident a major tax reform is on the horizon, although Trump's critics doubt it's possible after the Senate deadlocked on health care reform.
The tax reform that we're looking at is bigger and bolder than Reagan's. We're talking about deeper cuts on the corporate and personal side, simplifying the tax code, really have 90% of people filing their taxes on a postcard.
Dunn agrees with conservative economists who say tax cuts would eventually raise federal revenue. That's contrary to a 2012 Congressional Budget Office report, but Dunn says that's why he wants to eliminate the CBO. Next to Dunn's second district is Democrat Al Lawson's fifth. But considering the political difference between the two congressmen, it could be another planet. Lawson is an African-American insurance executive and a veteran Paul who likes to tell people about his first meeting in Washington.
There was 189 of us in the room, so I held up my hand,
And everybody turned around and said, you know, this freshman want to speak? And I said, yeah. I said, I want you all to know that I came up here to fix the Affordable Care Act. And everybody in the room turned around. I said, you came up to fix the Affordable Care Act. I said, did y'all hear him?
Lawson was touring the Bond Community Health Center shortly after the Virginia tragedy. Lawson called Trump's initial refusal to denounce hate groups political pandering at its worst.
The president should not endorse any of the hate groups. I don't care if those are the ones that put him in office or not. He is the president of everybody in America, not any particular group.
Lawson calls the struggle for acceptance and equality in the U.S. far from over in a statement on his congressional website. Dunn's webpage is silent on the tragedy. Lawson calls the Republican health care plan passed by the House heartless and reckless.
There are some Republican members who are the Freedom Caucus, they don't want anything. You know, but that's not going to be the driving point.
Lawson also blasts Governor Rick Scott and the Republican legislature for refusing to expand Medicaid with federal dollars. Money, Lawson argues, that went to competing states.
For the Affordable Care Act, there was something like 4 million people in Florida that didn't have access to health care. You know, we're the third largest state, 19 million plus people, you know, and all the resources that we had, we sent it to California and other places. Does not make sense.
About the only issue the physician and insurance executive can agree on is the need for some form of health care legislation. What that will be is anyone's guess. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
It has been a rough week for the Florida Highway Patrol. Talk of speeding ticket quotas led to the resignation of a troop commander. But as Sasha Cordner reports, the law enforcement agency is now trying to put that behind them and move forward.
The Florida Highway Patrol falls under the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. And at a recent meeting, Department Head Terry Rhodes assured Florida cabinet members that state troopers are definitely not under a quota to write tickets.
I assure you that FHP leadership understands that no quotas may be issued within our troops and no performance metrics may be impacted by the quota.
Rhodes' comments came after the head of Troop H, which covers part of the Florida Panhandle, issued a memo late last month to those under his command. In Major Mark Welch's email, he encouraged patrol officers write an average of 2 citations every hour as part of an enforcement initiative. While he'd stated it was more of a goal than a quota, Welch also said traffic citations were more effective than warnings in reducing crashes, injuries, and death. But Rhodes says she doesn't totally agree.
Citations are a method of enforcement, but it's not the only method. An example of this that I'm proud to say that within this past 2016, 328,000 warnings, faulty equipment notices, and disabled vehicle assists were given produced by FHP.
Meanwhile, Major Mark Welch has since resigned over his memo and will retire September 5th. Now Rhodes says she's making sure all state troopers within Florida Highway Patrol know about their no-ticket quota policy and calling for additional training.
We will immediately designate that quotas are prohibited by Florida law within our FHP policies. Effective immediately, we will be adding notations in our command staff and our lieutenants and above position descriptions stating that quotas are strictly prohibited. Also, FHP is going to be working with our department's learning and development office to ensure prohibition of quotas that addressed with online training. The training will be required to be annually done by all FHP supervisors.
Also among her goals is ensuring all troopers have access to Narcan, a drug that can help reduce opioid overdoses.
Right now we're in the process of acquiring those Narcan for about over 600 troopers. We're also going through the FDLE DCF grant process, but we'll have over 600 roadside that will have that. And it's our goal to have all roadside troopers have the Narcan.
And heading into next year's legislative session, Rhodes says pay increases for them is her number one priority. Just last month, Governor Rick Scott announced his 2018 budget proposal included $30 million in pay raises for the state's law enforcement officers. And Florida Highway Patrol Director Colonel Gene Spaulding says it will help his agency retain and recruit new candidates.
Florida Highway Patrol has a very exhaustive academy. It's 28 weeks. We're one of the few agencies, state agencies in the state that will bring a green recruit in with no law enforcement training. We put them through extensive training for 28 weeks. They get through the state exam. They're certified in Florida. And we can't afford to continue to train these highly qualified young men and women to go out and defend the streets and the public safety for the state of Florida, only to lose them to other states, other agencies within a very near future just because they're not making enough money.
And on the heels of receiving a pay raise this year, Spaulding says he's hopeful state lawmakers will be willing to do the same in 2018.
We have a responsibility as a state to be able to provide for their families so that they can have some sense of normalcy, some comfort in their lifestyle. We are 100% confident that the Florida legislature is going to also support this important initiative this year coming, and we look forward to it.
FHP's budget request also includes a $2.9 million active shooter training facility that can be used by other law enforcement agencies, as well as money for handheld narcotic analyzers and safety equipment. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
It's steady as she goes for Florida's unemployment rate. It remained unchanged from June to July, holding at 4.1% as the state reported a slight decline in the number of people working. The latest estimates released today by the State Department of Economic Opportunity reflected about 411,000 Floridians out of work in July. That's out of a total workforce of just over 10 million. The state unemployment rate remains below the national rate of 4.3%, which is certainly good news. State officials also say the overall trend is positive because nearly 300,000 people entered the state's workforce over the past year. Right now, the state estimates about 240,000 job openings in the state, in case you're looking. Most of the hot jobs are in construction, education, and health services. Still to come on Capitol Report, state lawmakers and local governments are trying a new approach to grow jobs in a rural region.
The fact is, rural Florida is in a crisis.
The Sable Trail pipeline went live this summer, but Central Florida residents are reporting that it's already sprung a leak.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, I need to report a very strong gas smell on State Road 200 where the new gas line has been installed.
And a rare cosmic event takes place on Monday, especially rare because of where it can be seen.
What's rare about this particular one is it covers the entire continental United States. So everybody in America is going to be able to see it.
Four counties in North Florida are forming what's known as a freight logistics zone to improve the region's chances for state infrastructure dollars. Nick Evans reports officials believe it's an important step toward growing jobs.
It's June this year, and Jerry Parrish is putting a question to the board members at an Enterprise Florida meeting.
Anybody want to guess how many counties have more jobs now than they did before the recession?
Parrish is the Florida Chamber's lead economist, and the answer isn't pretty.
This has been something that I've shown many places, and it is shocking. I will tell you, 31 counties in Florida have more jobs now than they did in 2007.
Florida has 67 counties, so in more than half of the state, questions about the strength of Florida's recovery might take a backseat to what recovery. Parrish explains it's a national trend, and Florida is actually doing better than average, but in many places, often rural, jobs simply haven't returned to pre-recession levels. Now, four of those counties in North Florida are trying something new.
hopefully everyone can hear me. Okay, so.
That's Ricky Fitzgerald from the Florida Department of Transportation, and he's speaking at a Georgia Pacific lumber yard in Hossford, Florida, a small, unincorporated community of 650 in Liberty County. Nearby state lawmakers and officials from three neighboring counties are here to announce they're forming a Freight Logistics Zone, or FLZ.
So, this FLZ and the plan that we have will help the region to capitalize on transportation network and also related activities to enhance, freight mobility and economic viability for this region.
To boil that down, by teaming up, Gulf, Gadsden, Liberty, and Franklin counties are giving themselves a better shot at state transportation money. Here's Tallahassee Democratic Representative Ramon Alexander.
We have to know who we are as a region, and we have to become comfortable with our responsibility and our focus to provide the quality of life within the region. And logistics, and being able to move people, move resources, we are strategically located within this region to do that.
The four counties cut a path from Port St. Joe on the Gulf of Mexico to the Georgia border, picking up transcontinental freeway and rail access along the way. And all four of them are on Parrish's list of counties with fewer jobs now than in 2007.
Some of us have been around for a long time in this area, and we know what it takes to make North Florida grow, and it's these types of projects.
This is Tallahassee Democratic Senator Bill Monfort.
Now, if you look at Florida, we talk about a lot of growth in Florida, we look at a lot of talking about a lot of jobs and so on. The fact is, rural Florida is in a crisis. It doesn't matter if it's education or if it's health care or economic development. We're in what I call a crisis. But this is the way to address the crisis that we're facing.
It's unclear whether the new partnership will be the silver bullet he's hoping for. It's only the second freight logistics zone in the state, although there is a third in development. But Monfort's call, well, that seems likely to grow louder in the next year and change.
We've seen tremendous growth in our jobs statewide in the last 7 or 8 years. Governor Scott gets a lot of credit for that. 1.4 million new jobs in Florida. But there's 36 counties in Florida that have actually lost jobs during that same period of time.
That's Jack Latvala, a Republican senator from Clearwater, speaking in Hialeah at one of three events kicking off his gubernatorial bid. At least on the Republican side of the race, rural areas could become a significant campaign issue. The Tampa Bay Times reports Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, frontrunner for the GOP nomination, is calling for more economic development in rural areas too. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A little over a month after the Sable Trail pipeline went online, Central Florida residents are reporting foul-smelling leaks. Despite the sulfur-like scent, the structure is not emitting natural gas, but Kate Payne reports neighbors and naturalists are still concerned about the impacts.
Beginning July 16th, residents of Marion County in Central Florida began reporting what they believed were gas leaks. They said the foul-smelling odor was coming from the direction of the Sable Trail pipeline.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, I need to report a very strong gas smell on State Road 200 where the new gas line has been installed.
Okay, I'll get a call in for service and we'll get the fire crew out to take a look at that to investigate, make sure everything's okay.
Janet Barrow is a Marion County resident and has been following the construction of the pipeline for 4 years. The structure runs for 6 miles through the ranch she lives on. And while she hasn't smelled the leaks, friends of hers have.
I have friends that live in that area and downwind from it. And they have businesses on the river and such. And they're smelling it up to over 4 miles away. And this has been going on for over a month now.
Members of the Marion County Hazardous Materials Squad and a Sable Trail technician responded to the site.
Engine 31, Rescue 16, Engine 16, Squad 16, and Hazmat 16. All units respond, reference gas leak outside and Spruce Creek Preserve.
They determined there was no natural gas leak. The smell was instead coming from the pipeline's odorant tanks. Natural gas has virtually no smell, so utilities add the sulfur-smelling substance to alert residents of potential issues. The Sable Trail technician located the leak and capped it. According to the Marion County Incident Report, the technician said this was a new system, and they're still learning.
Hello? You know, is that what they're going to say when the pipeline itself leaks gas?
Janet Barrow says natural gas or not, the leaks don't inspire confidence in the project. Reports of more leaks came on August 5th. In response for comment, Sable Trail representative Andrea Grover said there is no danger to the public, and the company is working to resolve the issue and is coordinating with local first responders.
They have, you know, air monitors that they go in, and they're able to tell at what parts per million this, you know, odor is.
James Lucas represents the Marion County Fire Rescue. He says the department's hazardous materials team is specifically trained to respond to Sable Trail.
We have a diagram of the building. We know where the pumps are. We know where the pump panels are. We are able to go in and mitigate a hazard as soon as possible.
Marilee Malwitz-Gipson is with the Sierra Club of Florida, and she says there's still a disconnect with the public.
They don't know to call Sable Trail. Most of them don't even know that Sable Trail exists in their community still, which is amazing, but that's the reports I'm getting from the people that live in the community.
And she's already bracing for future issues.
It would be great if there could be some sort of public service explaining what it is and what an explosion looks like and what is an incineration zone and how far is that reaching. It shouldn't just be on the public to do their research.
But she's worried that if the leaks continue, first responders may start to brush off residents' concerns. But James Lucas says that will not be the case.
We are going to respond morning, noon, or night regardless. And I would like to ease the concerns of those constituents in the southwest part of Marion County that Marion County Fire Rescue is here to serve, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Lucas says the agency is preparing for future leaks, and they're encouraging residents to reach out to their first responders. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, Monday will be a very special day. That afternoon, the moon will move between the Earth and the sun to produce a solar eclipse. Even though the sunshine state is not in the coveted band of totality, as astronomers call it, a lot of folks in Florida do have plans to watch the spectacle. That includes Dr. James Webb. He heads the Stalker Astroscience Center at Florida International University. Kate Stein from member station WLRN in Miami spoke with Webb about how to witness the eclipse safely, and she also asked him about his passion for writing songs about astronomy.
So, Dr. Webb, what's happening on Monday? What is a solar eclipse?
So, at this point in time on Monday, the moon will be precisely lined up with the sun, block out the sun, and its shadow will be cast onto the Earth. If you happen to be lucky enough to be in the location of that, the darkest part of the shadow, called the umbra, then you'll get a total solar eclipse. Day will become night, and you'll be able to see stars that you don't usually see this time of year in the sky for about 5 or 6 minutes, and then it moves off again. Down here, we're only going to get about 78% coverage, so as the moon moves across, it'll cover up a maximum 78% of the sun.
Will we be able to see planets and stars and things like that with the 80%? Roughly eclipse?
Probably not. No, I don't think we will. It'll get a little bit darker, and it'll be maybe a little bit cooler for a few minutes, but that's about it. It'll mainly be a visual thing, and I want to stress, too, that if people are tempted to look up to see the moon covering the sun, only look at it with approved filtered glasses. You can't use normal sunglasses. You have to have approved for solar eclipse.
I know those are kind of in short supply right now. What can people do as alternatives to solar glasses if they aren't able to find ones that are, you know, recommended by NASA?
You can build a pinhole camera out of a shoebox. It's very, very simple. You just cut a hole in one end, stick a little piece of aluminum foil, put a pinhole, and it projects the sun's image onto the other end of the shoebox inside, and put a little white screen there, and you can actually observe the entire eclipse. I built one when I was 11 years old, and there are all sorts of, search the internet, you can find plans for them. And they're very efficient and very safe. And also, you can watch online. I'm sure there's going to be live streaming of the event lots of different places.
How rare is an eclipse like this?
These eclipses occur twice a year, or sometimes three times a year, but at different locations on the Earth. And we know 78% of the Earth is covered by water, so a lot of them fall in the ocean. So you can travel to see a total solar eclipse, but this is what's rare about this particular one is it covers the entire continental United States. So everybody in America is going to be able to see it. And that's what's unique about this one.
Could you tell me a little bit about this really cool room that we are standing in?
We're at the Stocker Astro Science Center at Florida International University. And we control telescopes in different locations around the world, one in Arizona, one in Chile, and one in the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa.
So three different continents then you're controlling
Absolutely.
Telescopes.
Absolutely, at the same time sometimes.
Wow, that's really cool.
From this room.
Behind us, we also have a guitar and a music stand set up. And that's because Dr. Webb happens to also be a gifted and probably the only astronomer musician that I've ever encountered, at least. How did you decide to start doing this?
Well, I grew up in the 60s and 70s with a lot of good bands around, and I always loved the music, but I was always left a little bit cold by the words. Some of them were nonsensical. And I thought, man, if they could actually have true astronomical meaning in there, that would be cool. So nobody does that. So I started writing my own songs about astronomy, but keeping the sensibilities of 1960s and 70s rock music. So one of the songs I'm going to sing for you today is not actually included on the CD. It's a more recent song. It's called We Can Save Our World. Floating alone in the vastness of space, millions of species sharing life's race. We can keep the Earth a safe place. Let science.
I'm wondering what you think is coming next in astronomy. Like, what are you hoping to see in the next, you know, 5, 10 years or next 100 years?
I'm hoping society actually grabs a hold of science again and values science again, and we start doing exactly what the song says. Instead of building more missiles and threatening other countries, we build rocket ships to take us up to the space station again, make a colony on the moon, on Mars, explore the universe. I mean, us humans, as Carl Sagan said back in the 1970s in Cosmos series, us humans are made to explore. And if we're trapped in this little world, we start turning on each other. And that's basically what's happening in society today. We're not looking forward, we're not looking out, we're not looking toward the bright future. We could have if we looked at the stars. You know it doesn't have to be that way. Science shows us a better day. So we can save this world. It's not.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us again next week at this time for more reports from the state capitol. Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.